There are nearly 20 million college students in the United States. 40% will stop going to church during college. 50% will never return. The Lutheran Church Missouri Synod is seeking to meet this challenge through LCMSU. Why? Because 100% of college students matter to God and to His church. College is tough. You need Jesus. We'll help. LCMSU. Check us out at lcms.org/lcmsu.
Amos 5:24. But let justice roll on like a river, righteousness like a never-failing stream.
It's not a war on women. We're helping them to become, in a more full way, what they were made to be, wives and mothers.
So he's really saying to the lawyer, if you're looking for who you've got to love perfectly, it's everyone. But you're not going to be saved that way. The law is going to beat you up and leave you in the ditch. The only way you can be saved is not to go find neighbors, but to be found by the one who has mercy.
Hi, this is Eric, and I'm a steel worker from Pittsburgh, PA. With some noise reduction headphones and the new iPhone app, I listen to Issues Etc. all day long.
When I say the word culture, most people think cultured. They think about the arts. They think about ballet, opera, all those kind of things that cultured people enjoy, kind of high culture. Now, when I say the word pop culture, what do you think? Suddenly into your mind flashes images of the celebrities, the people that you see on the covers of magazines, that are on the red carpet at various Hollywood events. When we say pop culture, we usually think entertainment, don't we? But there's more to pop culture than merely entertainment, although it has a very strong bent toward entertainment. How have we been consuming our pop culture for almost 100 years? Well, we've been watching it, haven't we? From the comfort of our living rooms, from the comfort of our couches. We've been watching it on television. Before the internet, there was the internet before the internet. We used to call it TV. It's still around. It's just bigger and flatter and has more channels than ever before. Certainly not dead. We're going to be talking about pop culture as we begin a new series with Pastor Jonathan Fisk, introducing ourselves to something that we might not notice because it's so pervasive in the world around us, and we are part of it as well, and talking a little bit about TV viewing. I'm Todd Wilkin. Welcome back to Issues Etc. We are coming to you live from the studios of Lutheran Public Radio right here in Collinsville, Illinois. Pastor Jonathan Fisk will join us here for the first half hour of this hour, and then Dr. Gottfried Martins will be our guest. We're going to talk about Muslim refugees converting to Lutheranism. He's pastor of Trinity Lutheran Church in Berlin, Germany. It's a congregation that is featured in a recent AP story at a Berlin church, Muslim refugees converting in droves, and it really is in droves. We'll get that story from Dr. Gottfried Martins here in about a half hour. Pastor Jonathan Fisk is a regular guest. He's pastor of St. John's Lutheran Church in Oaks, North Dakota. He is host of the video blog Worldview Everlasting and author of the book Broken, Seven Christian Rules That Every Christian Ought to Break as Often as Possible. He joins us to begin a series on pop culture today, television viewing. Jonathan, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Hey, good to be here.
Let's get a working definition of pop culture. I mean, we're talking about really a behemoth that we have to get a good look at first before we start talking about the particulars.
Yeah, and even trying to define it, I think, is a pretty challenging thing. It's one of those things, who was the senator a while back who, in trying to describe pornography, said, I can't define it, but I know it when I see it. It's sort of the same idea in one sense. Everyone kind of is part of this pop world we're living in. It's a conglomerate of what everyone knows and sees. So you have these corners of entertainment and media that are niche marketplaces, and pop is sort of what everyone gets to. And that way, I think maybe the best way to define it is those parts of our identity as a people that are so palatable, so part of our natural taste, that nobody gets bothered by them. Everyone can listen to it. And so maybe the old joke of elevator music almost fits the mark as well. I think elevator music maybe used to be produced intentionally, but if you listen to it now, it's the music from the 60s and the 70s rock often. And yet that stuff has become just so the normal thing where our ears are used to hearing, that we don't even listen to it. It just creates the background of our lives. And so that maybe that's another way to say it, is that pop culture is that entertainment that forms the background of the American life in common. And of course, different individuals will have different experiences with this. But then, say, for example, Michael Jackson is the king of pop at one point. Why was that? Well, his music was sold at such a great level in so many numbers because it transcended boundaries. It was able to kind of rise to the top of the entire spectrum of the American mind and entertainment ear. And so to this day, then, you know, I listened to you guys talking about Taylor Swift the other week with Jennifer Robeck Morris, and she has done the same kind of thing with her sound. And yet pop culture is bigger than just the fluff on top too, because it is in one way just what Americana is now. So that includes our kitschiness, our love of the manufactured silly things that we're going to throw our money at. It includes increasingly for young people, I think, the way that they identify themselves visually, that they are trying to be a mirror to a certain set of images that are kind of pumped into our lives through these various media channels. But as you said, with the question itself, it's just how do you define this thing? What is it? At the very least, it's not niche. It's the opposite of niche culture. It's the opposite of tribal culture. Pop culture is that thing that Americans hold in common as we navigate a new media world.
Talk about the Christian, the kind of general call to the Christian, which we find in Christ's famous adage about being in the world but not of the world. But talk about it. It requires first of us that we have a situational awareness, a cultural awareness, so that we can distinguish ourselves from the culture. In other words, we don't just float around in it unaware of what we are taking part in. Talk about that, if you would.
Yeah, and I think that there are two pitfalls with that phrase, to be in the world, not of it, and one is that you would use that as sort of a phrase of license. So, you know, Jesus says that we have to be part of the world, so it's the job of the church to just embrace everything and use it for the church. I think that's an error. It's just a danger. On the other side is to ignore the statement altogether and try to create this kind of entirely segregated Christian culture that has no interaction with the world in which we live, no interaction or commonality with our neighbors, sort of as the Amish have tried to do, or the I guess it's the Hutterites up here in North Dakota where I am now. I've tried to do that a little bit. And that, too, is to kind of miss the point of what the Christian as sojourner in the world really is. We are sojourners in a strange land. We don't belong here. Our citizenship is elsewhere, and yet we do live here, and we do have vocations here. We are to interact with our neighbors and be good neighbors. Let's just strive for that. So what's the Christian to do to try to take those words seriously about being part of this world and yet of a different thing? Well, it starts with learning the true keys of discernment, which is to know in depth and in a real way, not just a surface way, a superficial way, but to know what you believe and why you believe it, to borrow the White Horse Inn term, to understand God's Word as revelation that includes a very true knowledge that cannot pass away, that is a foundation for every aspect of our lives that really ultimately matters. And to not just have it be a set of answers that, you know, kind of the joke about confirmation, you know, you pass a test and then you get to commune and then you never have to go to church again. Treating the theology in that way as if it's just a set of answers that we all have to go through, or right we go through once in a while in our lives, as opposed to it being an actual worldview, that God has a view of the world and that view of the world does drive real life. So for the Christian to understand that and then begin to learn it from the Scriptures can help them enhance their smelling of bad things. How do you discern something almost by its scent? But then also with that, I think it is the duty of the Christian to then take that worldview that you have founded in the Scriptures and engage what you have coming across your media plate, whether that be through audio or internet or TV, to engage it with that. That truth of the Scriptures, to ask yourself as you're watching the television show, what is it trying to teach me? What is it presenting to me? Where do I agree with it, and where do I not? And to have a certain freedom then to be moved by this stuff, to let the character development or the power of the movie inspire you, and yet to try to do so in such a way where when and if it is presenting to you a worldview that is in conflict with what Christians believe, to be able to know that in your head and disagree with that. And you can really do both of those things as you watch a television show. And people of different levels of piety will struggle at different places when it just becomes too much to deal with. But doing that then, being in the world in that way, and that I actually know what is on TV, is part of being a neighbor to my neighbor. Let me say it a different way. Being in the world, not of it, is going to make us stand out, as you said. We're going to be weird. But what does that weirdness look like? Does it look like the Levitical weirdness of the Old Testament, where our clothes just are all funky and we eat funny food? Or is that weirdness a deeper understanding of the human condition and the answer to that condition, which then affects how we behave morally with our neighbors, ethically with our neighbors, the kind of virtue and duty that we believe in and the kind of hope that we have in the midst of the decay that everyone else is trying to escape? Right. So should I stand out as a Christian because I dress differently, or should I stand out because I believe differently and what I believe affects my words and my actions as I engage the same world that you engage, right? And so I can empathize with you. I can laugh with you at what you found funny about Stephen Colbert, at what you didn't find funny about Stephen Colbert. And yet, at the same time, I'm not going to let either Stephen Colbert or any other night talk show host tell me what I believe or why I believe it when it's over and against the Word of God.
Is it purely a critical endeavor for the Christian that is just looking for what's wrong in pop culture?
No, I don't think so at all. In fact, I think that as I am personally, I'm always looking for what's right. The things that I enjoy most about a good TV and a good movie is when it captures the human condition. Even if it's sad, right, or even if it's wrong, something about the way that a character who is well-written and well-acted actually is changed by their bad decisions, whether for good or evil, if it's presented as truth, and like, you know, so I make this bad decision and it has bad ramifications, it ruins relationships in my life, I have to deal with this fallout, and then I come to see that character's hunger for virtue maybe in the midst of their collapse, I love that. I mean, it's reality. It's painting a picture of what we really are facing, as opposed to say something that is pretending the world is different than it is. I find that's where I would get more critical. But I'd say no. It's not just a critical endeavor at all. If anything, you're looking for the common points of your faith, because those are the places where you can enjoy the gift that is new media. I think technology and entertainment is part of how God designed the world. Leisure is something that He wants us to enjoy, and there is a place for that in the Christian life. The challenge, of course, is that it's all broken and racked with sin, and so we have to kind of have our vigilance up at the same time. But I don't think that the Christian just has to, you know, turn on. I've been watching Longmire recently. It's a kind of a cop show. It's set in rural Wyoming. Really, really fantastic show. You know, it's not like I sit down with my notepad and start writing down every time a character does something that I think is wrong. Instead, what I do is I get drawn into the story and I begin to care for the individuals. And I don't want to say I pray for them. They're not real, but I begin to hope for their story to take a better turn, to take a turn in which they find some sort of reformation or atonement of some kind, or even just catching the bad guy. And what I love about Longmire is the virtue of the main character. He's a horribly complicated man who is really, really incompetent in his kind of social skills, and yet his virtue, his sense of duty, his willingness to do the right thing is a profoundly strong draw for me. There is a certain level of enjoyment in the entire thing. Another example I could give you, I played a video game a couple years ago that really caused a bit of a stir. It's called The Last of Us, and it's about life after a zombie apocalypse caused by some sort of fungal development in humanity, and you're this kind of mercenary at large who gets hooked up taking a young girl to a band of freedom fighters. You don't know why at first. You find out it's because she's immune to the disease. And over the course of the game, there's a number of different developments, but it's one of the most profoundly, emotionally impacting experiences of my life to play this game. And I know for people who don't play video games, that sounds kind of like a silly thing, but it was more impactful than a movie could ever be because of the depth of involvement I had in it. And at the peak moment of the movie, or of the video game, at the very end, after he saved her from these freedom fighters who are going to basically dissect her to try to find the answer, she asks him if they did all that they could, because she was unconscious. She asked if they did all that they could and they let her go because they knew they couldn't do more, and he lies to her. And he tells her, they don't want you anymore. And it presented this tremendous conflict of conscience for not just me, but I remember listening to radio interviews about, pagans, unbelievers, struggling with the conflict of conscience over this blatant lie that's the very end of the game. And yet I would encourage people who love video games to play a game like this in spite of that, not because the decision he made is right. I'm not going to advocate either way right now, but because of the powerful good of this man who you see him also throughout the game. He changes from not caring about her at all to becoming sort of a surrogate father for her. And in that, as Christians, we love fatherhood. We love protecting the weak, right? We love doing what's right. And so there's a powerful story to be told there and much to be enjoyed as the vocation of leisure is done. I mean, we could talk about how leisure can be an idol as well, and maybe we should at some point, but there is a goodness there, and Christians are free to enjoy that.
Pastor Jonathan Fiske is our guest. We're beginning a series with him on this Wednesday afternoon, September the 16th, on pop culture, an introduction to pop culture, a little bit more when we come back, and we'll talk about TV viewing as well as part of the media by which we both consume and participate in pop culture. Pastor Jonathan Fiske is pastor of St. John's Lutheran Church in Oaks, North Dakota, host of a video blog, Worldview Everlasting, and author of the book, Broken: 7 Christian Rules That Every Christian Ought to Break As Often as Possible. Sometimes you gotta do like Elvis did and shoot the damn thing. Bethany Lutheran College is pleased to sponsor Issues Etc. and Lutheran Public Radio. Bethany Lutheran College is located in the picturesque river town of Mankato, Minnesota, and is committed to making Christian higher education affordable for all with generous financial aid packages available. At Bethany, you'll find stimulating academic programs, a friendly atmosphere, and opportunities to grow both in intellect and in your faith, all within the framework of a supportive Christian environment. For more information, visit us on the web at blc.edu.
LutheranReformation.org is the brand new one-stop shop for all things Reformation. It's your source for news, events, history, videos, activities, educational resources, and much, much more. New resources will be added regularly, each one designed to help you celebrate and remember the 500th anniversary of the Reformation. Because Reformation 2017 is still all about Jesus. Visit LutheranReformation.org today. LutheranReformation.org.
Where Christianity meets culture, you're listening to Issues Etc.
You might wonder, is it possible for my child with special needs to receive a rich classical Christian education? Issues Etc. guest Cheryl Swope answers yes. With the Simply Classical curriculum created by Cheryl and published by Memoria Press, there's no reason to withhold a beautiful education from any struggling student. Visit classicalspecialneeds.com and save $5 on your next order by using the coupon code LPR. Classicalspecialneeds.com.
Have you recently graduated from high school or college and are still making up your mind about your future career? Here's an opportunity to serve your neighbor through an extended, uniquely Lutheran service program. It's called the Lutheran Youth Corps. Find out more about the Lutheran Youth Corps at lcms.org/youthcorps. Life together through witness and mercy, the Lutheran Youth Corps. lcms.org/youthcorps.
A message came back from the great beyond. It's 57 channels and nothing on. 57 channels and nothing on.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilker. We're beginning a series on pop culture. Today we're talking about television viewing. Pastor Jonathan Fiske, host of the video blog Worldview Everlasting, is our guest. Jonathan, I do want to talk about, we have to set this in its context. The television viewing comes now sounding kind of quaint when we have this form of media that is an aggregate of all previous forms of media together. But talk about the role of media, be it television or any of the others, and internet included, in our consumption of and our participation in pop culture.
Right. Well, and with that, I would have to say, you know, this phrase media ecology, the study of how the communication of information works and how different types of media or mediums, we call them, whether they be print or radio or television or whatever the internet is, you said it well, a conglomerate of them all, they act differently on our brains. They convey information in different ways. Monet's picture of a flower is going to have a different impact on the viewer of it than a poem about a flower. And this isn't necessarily bad nor good, but there is different communicative value or strengths and weaknesses in these mediums. And radio changed the world by making communication something that could be done across space very quickly, a brand new kind of idea. I mean, you used to have to send a horse with a little note, right, to get information somewhere. Now you could just broadcast it. TV upped the ante with this by adding the motion picture to the broadcast. As you track the way that this kind of information works on the human brain, you find that it isn't just about speed. It's actually about type of information that can be communicated effectively, about how one receives it as well. So I'll try to give an example. If you watch a live-action drama, let's say you went and saw something, you know, really classic, The Crucible, you know, some other kind of classic drama in a small venue setting with 50, you know, viewers around a stage in the round, it could come off as being, you know, very, very powerful. If you were to then, even for like a young child, I should say, you know, you take an 8 or a 10-year-old or a 15-year-old, they're going to get drawn into that experience. If you put that same actors, same production on a set shot video camera and try to pump it through YouTube, you're going to find it's far more difficult to get into it. It's going to be a much more complicated or challenging thing for a 10 or a 12-year-old to sit there and watch it on a screen. And there's something about this just being a fact of the medium itself, of the technology itself, and how it works. And what this did, especially with television, was it created a new emphasis in what's worth communicating based on what we enjoy as opposed to maybe what we need or what is good for us. So, you know, C-SPAN, where they broadcast what the Senate and the House are doing in the United States is not really highly viewed television, right? What is highly viewed is this pop idea, this lowest common denominator, what we can all just kind of stare at and be brought to wonder by momentarily. And as this happened in the 1980s, a book was written called Amusing Ourselves to Death, which really was questioning what is this doing to our public discourse? What is this doing to our ability as humans to think and to make decisions as a people? And right at that time then, right as this question is being asked, you got the internet suddenly kind of trickles onto the stage and changes it all again. And I don't know that anyone really has their finger on what this means with the internet. I've not seen anybody assess the internet the way that the TV was assessed as a media form. But what it has done again is it's brought that what do we desire most? That's the thing that is seen the most. That's the thing that is pushed forward the most. Even the idea of sharing things on Facebook, only things I like get shared, right? And so what does this do to truth? What does this do to the discussion of that truth? And this is without even bringing in the questions of postmodern disbelief in truth and those kinds of things. And then here you are as a Christian trying to understand it, or maybe not, maybe just letting it all tell you how to think, right? And then that's the real danger. So with the advent of television and the adding of motion picture, music, and information into one driving image. One of the other things media ecology has shown is it's very good at getting behind your thinking. It bypasses your frontal lobe, your questioning, your critical thoughts, and it gets into your emotional life. And it can actually change the way you think without you ever knowing you're thinking differently. I think the internet has a way of doing that as well by continuing to push forward these moving images with music and sound, but then also linking you very quickly to more and more of that kind of information, so you can follow the rabbit trail if you want to, and just sort of be drawn into a certain worldview. I don't know. That may be a little too heady as an idea, but it's a pretty, again, complicated question. What is the internet doing to us? I don't know, but it's definitely changing the way we think. We think faster than we used to, or we require shorter ways of describing things. I was listening to a podcast about a card game I play, and they were talking about a movie from the 80s, and they used the phrase, they said, "Oh no, it still stands up." And what he meant by that was, if you go watch a movie in the 80s now, you'll find they're too slow. You can't, even a 50-year-old person will struggle to sit there because the pictures aren't moving fast enough. There isn't enough change in the imagery. And this is, again, a reflection of this hypering of information. And it isn't just the movies. It isn't just the entertainment. It's also how we process information, how long we're willing to think about a valuable thought. And so what does this mean, then, when you then have to go and sit down on Sunday morning and study a book? Yeah, are you prepared to study books anymore? Does anybody even read anymore? How does this influence a people of the word when we have become a society of images? And all of that I'm not going to profess to have all the answers to, but I do think it's worth talking about.
What is the greatest benefit that television has brought to us, and what is the greatest danger that it presents to us?
If you go with Neil Postman again, the guy who wrote the book in the 80s, he has an interesting take on this. He says the greatest thing TV brings us is the inane. If you want to talk YouTube, the pictures of cats, you know, the meaningless drivel that you can just kind of smile at, and that this is what this media is best for. He says that the worst of it is when we try to pretend it's serious, when we try to use media for, say, a presidential debate, or he has a whole section on using television in the classroom, and that Sesame Street is actually the undoing of American civilization by undoing education, by trying to pretend that education is fun. And as a result, making it so that the young person, when he's faced with education in the sense that I have to learn because I have to work to learn this, then rejects it. And so there is, I think there's something to what he's saying there. What does it have to offer us? It has to offer us leisure. It has to offer us a way of telling stories. Humans are inherent storytellers. We connect with each other on the basis of the stories we've experienced, whether they be real stories of our own experiences or whether they be stories we've watched or heard told. The danger is that we would, have our minds shaped in such a way that we can no longer think a coherent thought and question an idea, so that, you know, I ask, well, does this fit with my Christianity or not? That at the same time, I think as you get drawn into it, we would also not question what's being presented to us at all. That I know as a young man growing up in a Christian household with a TV in my bedroom, I never once assumed or thought to not assume that everything the TV told me was true. It just was. It's on TV. It must be right. You know, they know what they're talking about. The internet, even more so. The great danger is that we would forget that all men are evil and that all men are liars, and that this entire project is being driven by capitalism, being driven by making money. Of its own nature, attempting to tell you the truth. It's of its own nature attempting to get you to click so that you will click again, so you will click again, so you'll put in your credit card information and buy something. And we should be very aware of that. And then also, I would say, much more, teaching our children to be aware of that. We talk about catechesis and training children in confirmation class. I think one of the chief things to do in that classroom, and I try, I don't profess to be a master of this, but to wake them up to see, the internet doesn't have your best interest in mind, even if it's telling you something that you really are enjoying. Even if it's letting you watch Longmire or Netflix, it's not because it's out for your own good. The devil still rules this world, and we got to be aware of that, even as we live in the midst of it.
Finally, with only about 30 seconds here, what of the person who says, look, I just don't have the box in the house. I don't have the big screen in the house. Don't use it.
Good for you. Enjoy that. God bless you. I'd love to move out somewhere and do that too. My vocation doesn't really let me do that. I need to connect with my members. Many of them are on Facebook, Worldview Everlasting and Issues, etc., as a way of getting the gospel out into this world. But if that's something you want to do, great. The danger is that you would take your own piety and your own decision-making and make it a rule for everybody else. You know, pietism is sort of when I take my own moral stand that I've decided for me and try to impose it on others. And that, I would say, is not so good. But by all means, I mean, if you would prefer to live tech-free, go for it. You might have some trouble, getting information in the next 20 years, even from your church, as you move from bulletins to newsletters to email. But I'll work with you. That's fine. Just don't claim that that's the Christian's only avenue. The Christian, very much in their vocation, can make use of technology, whether it be a car or a telephone or the internet.
Pastor Jonathan Fisk is pastor of St. John's Lutheran Church in Oaks, North Dakota. He's host of the video blog Worldview Everlasting and author of the book Broken, 7 Christian Rules That Every Christian Ought to Break as Often as Possible. You will find a link to this book and Worldview Everlasting at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Jonathan, thank you.
Absolutely, Todd. Thank you.
When we come back, Dr. Gottfried Martens is going to join us. He's pastor of Trinity Lutheran Church in Berlin, Germany, and featured in a story from the Associated Press on Muslim refugees converting to Christianity. We'll be right back.
O Lord, open my lips.
Listen to chapel services live, weekday mornings from Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana.
Make haste, O God, to deliver me.
Morning Chapel from Kramer Chapel. Live weekday mornings at 9 Central, 10 Eastern, 8 Mountain, and 7 Pacific at issuesetc.org.
Do you have a hard time finding Christian greeting cards and gifts that aren't either sappy or theologically suspect? Ad Crucem offers the perfect combination of art and the truth of the Scriptures with beautiful and reverent greeting cards and gifts. Deliver the true comfort of the gospel, Christ crucified for sinners, to family and friends with Ad Crucem. ADCRUCEM.com. Confessing the faith through art and word. AdCrucem.com.
The people of Zion Lutheran Church, East Moline, Illinois, invite you to discover the blessings that await you here. At Zion, we proclaim a gospel of free grace for all. No one ever falls too low to find forgiveness and peace with God in Christ Jesus. To learn more, visit us at zionem.com or join us on Sunday at 9 a.m. Zion is located at 17618 Hubbard Road in rural East Moline, Illinois.
In Hosea 4, we read, "My people are destroyed by lack of knowledge." At the CLCC, we educate Lutherans on being Lutheran. The Confessional Lutherans for Christ's Commission treasure our Lutheran beliefs and think that all Christians would if they learned what we believe, teach, and confess. Visit our website at theclcc.org. See what we have to offer. Get on our mailing list, or better yet, join us. And encourage your pastors to hold an event in your area. For more information, go to theclcc.org.
Educating a new generation of Lutherans, you're listening to Issues, Etc.
Do you have a student finishing up 8th grade at a Lutheran school? Do you wish there were a Lutheran high school close to where you live so your student could continue going to a Lutheran school? What if there was an opportunity for high school students in public or Lutheran school to take classes like Latin, logic, and hard-hitting theology courses? Well, there is. It's called Wittenberg Academy, the first completely online classical Lutheran high school. Visit our website, wittenbergacademy.org, to find out more.
Hollywood's attitude toward Christianity, the Bible's influence on the U.S. Constitution, the decline of biblical preaching, the connection between biblical illiteracy and Western morality. You'll find these essays and more in the new book, The Word They Still Shall Let Remain, The Place of the Holy Scriptures in the Faith and Life of Confessional Lutherans. Check it out at shop.logia.org. The Word They Still Shall Let Remain, shop.logia.org.